Well, hopefully you've dug yourself out of all the snow that you've been under for the last 24 hours. If you live anywhere in Northeast Ohio or anywhere in the northern and eastern, actually, I think even the south, I think even the southern states, they got hit with some snow and ice. It's been a rough 24 hours, 48 hours weather-wise for that half of the country. So hopefully a little baseball talk here warmed you up. This is Guardians of the Future. I'm Justin Latta, joined by Willie Hood. Willie, we got some actual baseball transactions to talk about, even if it is
Cleveland bringing
lower one. Level and it is very brief.
I haven't had enough coffee yet. I'm working on my third cup now, though. So
don't sound
maybe
so
that'll
excited.
Get my energy level up a little bit. It's decaf, yeah. It does me. It's psychological, man.
Is it decaf? Oh, well, that's not going to help you. Caffeine is just a placebo. Okay. But yeah, we did have some transaction news, at least. I mean, now that they don't do it in July anymore because of COVID. Now they do it in January, and it was the 2022 signing class. And interesting class for Cleveland. It has a lot of shortstops in it, but the headliners
that's
shortstops.
True.
I thought that was
going
the
for
most
a big name
thing. I know that people pointed that out.
Catcher.
They were surprised at the featured
names
there
are
of the class
so many
were not shortstops.
Shortstops. I mean, look at Jose Tena, who signed for $400,000, or Angel Martinez, who signed for $500,000. You know, you can still get quality, talented players at those positions for lesser bonuses. I mean, Jose Ramirez, if anyone mm-hmm. is proof of that, at $50,000. But if I'm not mistaken, I didn't mention him in this article that I wrote over the weekend, but Ronald Acuna Jr. went for $10,000. I mean, that's a heck of a steal, if anyone is. Yeah, I think
wow,
his brother signed with Texas
that's,
last year, if I remember
I think
right.
I think his brother just got signed. I think his brother got more money than him. Let's see. There's Luis. Yeah, Luis Angel Acuna. His brother just signed with the Twins. That was this weekend. Brian Acuna. Great. Oh, wow. Just what we need. Another Ronald Acuna in the AL Central. He got $650,000.
You know,
so that's a lot more than that's a lot more than his brother got, which is crazy. His brother got His brother got $435,000, so not it wasn't that
Baseball America
that
didn't
little,
put
but,
any signing bonuses out this year. I don't know if people noticed that or not for safety purposes for some of these players, because some of the things that are going on in South America, they're concerned with the health and well-being of some of these young players and potential for abductions and things like that that we've seen in recent years. So they've been pretty adamant about putting player safety ahead of anything, you know, which I think is wonderful. I think a lot mm-hmm. of people try to gauge talent too much on the signing bonuses that these players get anyways. But Jesse Sanchez from MLB.com did put out a few of them. There's several of them for the Guardians. They had, I believe it was six players go in six figures or higher that I'm aware of. And I don't know the other eight guys signing bonuses, but I've come across four players right now. You know, I think Jason Chorio is really exciting. A lot of people are saying he's a center fielder. I don't know if he's a center fielder or a corner outfielder. I mean, he's 6'2 already and $165 an above average speed. Does he fill out the frame and lose a little bit of that? Above average is not your typical center fielder. A typical center fielder is usually your plus speed or better. So in my write-up of Chorio for our top 10, I mentioned him as a corner outfielder and mm-hmm. somebody that may outgrow center field. I called him a bit of a tweener, and that's why, because he does have the frame to add strength and some weight and potentially slow down, but he also has the arm to handle right field. And if the power comes, you know, he may be better off being plugged in a corner outfield spot like right field with the arm that he has. He's a Bloodlines signing for the Guardians, and several of these players were something that they like because you get higher instincts, higher IQ just by virtue of being exposed to the game and having kind of a base to look at, like, this is where we think this player can develop to as well.
Yeah, he's got an interesting profile. I mean, if he grows into his frame a little more, people think that he could be a little more of a middle of the order type bat. And if he doesn't, because we've seen guys like Tristan McKenzie, who we think are going to develop into a large frame. I mean, McKenzie has a big frame, but he never, or he's tall and lanky, never grew into it. If Chorio doesn't, then yeah, maybe he's a center fielder kind of leadoff hitter. So
yeah.
I guess it's good that he has those two outcomes ahead of him, because either way, I mean, again, he's 16 years old and hasn't played an official game yet, so we don't know, but at least you kind of have a, you know, he's not stuck to one profile. Like I said, some people think he can be in a corner bat, and some people think he can be a leadoff type center fielder. And that's, it's good to have those range of outcomes rather than, you know, just, okay, he's already too big framed and he's a corner bat and that's it. And that's why Cleveland stays away from those guys, because their futures are very set and hard to grow. At least there's room for growth for a trio, like you said. And very, just looking at a few
was clips that from of the right
swing,
hand side?
Very handsy swing. Like he's very, his hands are really out in front on his swing. And I'm curious to see what Cleveland does with that. You know, I don't recall specifically. I think it was both.
I think that comes into play too when you have a switch hitter said, that's 16 years old. I look at which is their natural side, you know, and see how they're doing from that side first, and then, you know, maybe they end up like a Cedric Mullins and they end up dropping the switch hitting altogether and become a better player because of it. But getting Chorio, and you know, I didn't mention it in my write-up over the weekend, but he was listed in the top 50 players over at Fangraphs for the top 50 international players overall. Last time Cleveland signed players in the top 20 on MLB.com's list, now they've had a few. I think Jose Pastrano was toward the back end. But my mind goes back to Gabriel Rodriguez, Aaron Bracho, George Valera, and those three in particular were all in the 20s, and Chorio is ranked higher than any of those. So that shows how talented he could be. You also have to take in perspective how talented is the particular class, kind of like a draft class. How deep is the draft class? How deep is this class of international talent too? I think that shows the ceiling that Chorio could have. Another interesting ad was Victor Isturiz, who is related to none other than Macer and Cesar Isturiz, who are his uncles, you know, and he did a lot of training with them down in Venezuela. So, again, high baseball IQ, very smart player. Yep, you got that MLB bloodlines, which they like. He's reportedly a very good defensive catcher and has the bat to ball skills that Cleveland likes. You know, in any write up or any video that I've seen of him, he's looked like something that they target, the guy that can put the bat on the ball. He's not going to hit for power, maybe a singles doubles type of hitter, but a guy that's probably going to bat for a decent average. And seems like he's a good defender right now. Short, stocky build. I'll reiterate, both of these guys are 16, with Isturiz being younger of the two. Them being so young, think of young Kenzie Noel when he signed. If I'm not mistaken, he was signed as a shortstop and listed 6'1", 180 pounds when he signed. He's all of 6'4", 240 now. I think Alexi Planez was listed 6'2", like 175 or something like that. And he's every bit of 6'4", I think 200, 210 now. So there's a lot of physical maturation for these players ahead. You know, you can't, everybody's not going to get taller. They're not going to get bigger or stronger, but you can kind of anticipate it with some of the guys, although it doesn't always work out. Tristan McKenzie. But getting these guys in a good physical weightlifting program, getting them proper nutrition, things that they may have been lacking in the, you know, those things in the past, makes you wonder if there is still more growth potential for them. And that's something that happens. And that's why you get a guy like Jose Ramirez who exceeds the talent or who flashes one tool early on and then the maturation comes, whether it be physical or, you know, just game maturity comes and a player has a higher understanding, puts in a lot of work and develops really quickly. How does a player like Acuña get signed for $10,000 and then end up in the major leagues at like age 21? You know, that's 4 or 5 years after he signed. That's relatively quickly for such a young player.
Right. And I'm glad you brought up the, you know, when it was the last time they signed someone in this area of international rankings. That, I had someone ask me that on Saturday when we were I was tweeting out the links to your story and then the retweeting Jesse Sanchez, who was covering at MLB.com. And someone said, when's the last time they had a top five international signing? And I'm like, if you go by, it depends on whose rankings you go by, because MLB Pipeline really is different than, you know, Fangraphs or Baseball America. They really do things differently. George Valera in 2017 was ranked number 20 by Pipeline, MLB Pipeline. Mm-hmm. And if you go by Fangraphs, he's number 8. So clearly we know who was higher on him. And right now it looks like Fangraphs was right to be higher on him. So it's really subjective. But like if you just look at Pipeline's rankings, Gabriel Rodriguez was number 6. And, you know, he didn't get off to a great start last year. According to Pipeline, Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis Jr. were not in the top 20 of their class. Those are two generational talents. And in their class, they weren't even top 20, according to Pipeline. So if you're looking at those rankings and thinking, oh, we didn't sign anybody in the top 5 or top 10, whatever, that's a really poor gauge of how to look at this sort of thing. Like, I'm looking at Fangraphs list here. Here's 2016. You know, the Padres signed a ton of kids, just a ton. I mean, Adrian Morejone, Jorge Ona, Luis Almanzar, Jason Rosario, Gabriel Arias was number 9 on Fangraphs list for their signing class that year. Some kid named Jordy Barley I've never heard of. You know, they've got a ton of kids in this list, and it's like, okay, only like one of them made it. Adrian Morejone made it. And there's Gabriel Arias. It's like, and Randy Arozarena was on this list for the Tampa Bay Rays. He's 13. He was listed as a second baseman / center fielder. And, you know, he ends up being really what looks like the best player in this class right now. The top player ranked on that board was Kevin Maiten. That was the Braves signing him. And he ended up being released because of the Braves infractions signing international free agents that year. So it's just so hard to project with these boards. I mean, like you said, Jose Ramirez gets signed for, you know, $50,000, ends up being the best player in his class. And shoot, even 2 years or 2017, I mean, Aaron Brocio, you know, $125,000. That's $200,000 more than George Valera got
for the Guardians.
And, right. You know, it's just, right. So if looking at these people who are ranking this and saying, oh, well, when's the last time they got
to a player in this range? Are we talking about dollars spent or actual talent and development of the talent that's in the organization?
It's a bad way to judge. I think Cleveland does a really good job
when you have a quarter of your, I'll say, top 60 players are international free agent signings. Some of them came via trade, but that's also identifying talent, you know, in the minor leagues. But when you're able to bring in such young players and you're bringing in a class this year at 16 players, and they will add more. It won't just be the 16. I don't know how much money that they have left to spend. They had about $6.2 million to spend this year, which was one of the larger pools, one of eight teams with that size of a pool. But they like to spread the wealth, bring in quality or quantity quality. If you all remember the 2020 draft, I said they essentially made four second round picks with the way that they drafted in 2020. Well, they kind of do the same thing with the international period. They don't go for the top guy in the class or the top five guys in the class necessarily. They tend to go for those middle tier talents, very talented players. That's where you get two guys with a $1 million signing bonus. Then there's Yankee Batista and Rafael Ramirez. Both of them are shortstops, and both of them get signing bonuses just below $1 million. Ramirez got $800,000, and Batista's number hasn't been published yet, but from what I've heard for months, that it's going to be close to $1 million as well. So I expect something very similar with him. Then you have younger guys there too. I think Alberto Mendez got $320,000, and Yofran John, $425,000. But really, it's not about landing the top talent in the class. It's about landing several guys. For Cleveland in particular, notice almost every single one of these players is a position player because that's the safest demographic. If you're going to sign a 16-year-old pitcher, good chance he's going to get injured along the way and you'll never get anything out of it. So they won't sink a lot of money into that. They've gone away from that. They have signed some in recent years. Carlos Vargas, $275,000. I think Austin Adino, a young pitcher that we haven't really heard about yet that we should in the coming years, got like $90,000 a year or two ago when he signed. But you can't just look at the dollar figure or the highest ranking. That's very deceptive. But at the same time, it is good to know that there is some players who are highly recognizable on the international stage. Right. And Aaron Bracho, because, you know, he played in Perfect Game Classics. I know he played in Florida in several different games. Angel Gnau, that they signed last year, and Fran Aldui both had international exposure. So they do like that. They like the players that have played on the big stage. If they can handle the big stage, then they think they'll be able to transition better. But you'll see that because talented players get these invitations to play in the showcase events, you know, like Luis Durango played for Panama's national team. It's also an acknowledgement of their level of talent. I don't remember. I think it was like 500,000 or 750,000. I'm thinking it was closer to 500,000.
That's like one of the most interesting guys right now.
And he's one that I really like.
Yeah, it was 500,000. I think you wrote that up 2 years ago.
There with him, not just because of the bloodlines, but sure did. You know, going back to that, and then the national exposure that he had. Speed plays for him, especially out in center field where he can cover the whole outfield.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of random ones. The other thing I wanted to point out too before we move on or just kind of banter about this a little bit more is that I don't think this is a trend, but it's just kind of funny to think about. If you look at the catchers, just because we're talking about is Turris. So Robert Lopez was a bigger international signing, or, you know, somewhat bigger one a couple of years 2 years ago. Richard Paz, I guess, wasn't a bigger one, but I'm just looking at Richard Paz and Victor Planchard's a switch hitter, I guess. But him, you know, Robert Lopez and Paz, and now Asturias are all left-handed hitting catchers. There's not a lot of guys in the system that hit left-handed that are catchers. You know, Bo Naylor does. That's about it. Zach Fischer, the catcher from Fischer. Okay. He's a left-handed hitting catcher. So I just kind of wonder if that's like, if they're left, if they hit left-handed, are they pushed to catcher? I don't know if that's like something that happens, but it's just something notable that stood out to me that, you know, one of the top two players in their class this year was a left-handed hitting catcher. Cause I feel like I've seen that before.
Well, you know, when they,
I don't know if it's a trend or not. I know we keep looking at things as trends, and I don't know if that thing is a trend or not. I think
you can say that's a trend.
I definitely noticed it. Right. I don't know if this is, but I thought it was worth pointing out just that I've seen this before, and I feel like maybe it's a trait they like. Maybe it's not a trend, but if it's something that they can get, or if they can add to the road, or I mean, they're looking for the best players, the guys I think they're going to hit anyway, so it doesn't matter. But I guess maybe if that's always a bonus, I don't know. But I like him. I like Robert Lopez. Goodness knows this organization needs catching help. I mean, which Bo Naylor, Brian Lavastida, and after that, it's
two
like
or three undrafted free agents.
Seth Cadell. That's about all I can really look down at Seth Cadell. And so,
and maybe it's that. Call me confused. That was the word my brain was searching for, but my mouth wasn't. call me confused, but
you are complex.
It seems odd that they went with so many pitchers last year, and then for the last 2 years, they haven't really drafted a catcher. They have signed a couple international free agents, which doesn't do any good because these guys are 16 years old and, you know, you're not going to see them for several years. I think it magnifies the loss of Andreas Melendez for the organization, as a player and as a person too. You know, a lot of these prospects are going to feel that impact for the organization, losing a player at a position of need, definitely for his family, losing him, you know, big loss for this organization and for everyone who was involved in his life in some way.
Yeah. I mean, because he was probably the next guy on this list that would have been, I think he was firmly behind Naylor and Lavastida. Obviously, it sounds like he was a great teammate too. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at Joe Donovan and Zach Fascia and Gavin Collins and Seth Cadell. I mean, they, like you said, they've signed three non-drafted free agent catchers in the last 2 years. And I wonder if something like that has to do with the, I don't know if it's lack of backstops in the draft. I mean, Bo Naylor wasn't necessarily drafted as a catcher. I mean, he was announced as a catcher, but, you know, he wasn't just a catcher when he was in high school. They can, and Lavastida was a late convert. Yeah, and there's a lot of people who still think that might be where he plays. And then you look at Brian Lavastida, you know, he was a shortstop and a third baseman in college and switched to catcher late in his college career, and then Cleveland drafted him, wasn't developed him as a catcher. So I almost wonder if, like, there's guys they're picking up that aren't catchers when they pick them up. Maybe they're thinking about converting them. Like, one case is Jonathan Lopez, who was an infielder. He played some catcher last year, and he didn't play much. I think he was still kind of learning the position. But, like, as Jonathan Lopez get more reign as a catcher this year, now that he's a year into that conversion, and are there other guys that they're looking at positionally that maybe they play infield now, but, you know, like you said, Kenzie Noel was signed as a shortstop, and now he's a most likely a first baseman.
Right now,
same
they
with
do
Junior
have
Sanquin.
Two international signings, you know, Torres and then Jose Cedeno.
Catcher is
Cedeno
one of the areas they can
from
these
Venezuela.
Guys
so there's two this year. There was Robert Lopez last year, and I think there were Manny Miejas was another one, or Manuel Miejas was another one. And from what I've understood, that he's one that the organization likes as well. So, I mean, there's some younger catching here. I think part of it is the testament to how the organization may see how difficult it is to develop that position rather than not really them valuing it, just how difficult it is to draft and develop that position. It's not easy. In previous years, in a 40-round draft, they drafted about four catchers every single year, and four or five and signed them, but you know, you ended up with some organizational guys. Mike Rivera is still kicking around. Josh Rolette was around for a while. I don't know if he's still with the organization anymore or not. I don't think he is. But all of your guys that you draft aren't going to pan out. There is good news on the horizon, though. If you look into the 2022 draft, there's a lot of catching depth in this draft class. That doesn't necessarily mean that all of it will be in the draft. Some of these high school players may end up on campus, but you know, looking at the top 200, I've already seen probably 20 players, 20 draftable catchers in the top 200 talent for me. And then I've seen as many as 30, maybe slightly more than 30 for the top 300 talent too. So, I mean, there's depth to be had in a very valuable position this year. Maybe they end up drafting a few of them. But like I said, I think it's a very difficult position to develop internationally, all the more. I mean, you have a long track record of a very difficult position to develop in the last 2 years that they have invested in it as well. Signing Robert Lopez last year, I think for $900,000, and then Isturiz this year for $1.2 million. Looks like next year there's a lot of ties, and Fangraphs has Welbin Francisca, a shortstop, I believe from the Dominican Republic, linked to the Guardians right now. He's a guy that's supposed to get seven figures. He is ranked number 17th overall on the board at Fangraphs, which is a high compliment for him, because there's a lot of other international players on there that are older players. Suzuki is one that's on there. He's at the top of the list. But there's several players above him that are much older than he is. So that's, I think, a high compliment for Francisca. And I'll add, I've heard rumors that there's a shortstop that they'll be signing, that another shortstop that they'll be signing next year that will be a pretty high dollar bonus baby, I guess you could say. But a lot of these guys have deals in place a year or 2 years in advance. So you're talking about a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old who has a contract laid out for them or offered. Already Francisca has a deal supposedly with Cleveland for next year's signing period, you know. Yeah, he's not 16. He's 15, and a lot of these teams do that. They're offering these kids millions of dollars, and rarely do they back out of it, and rarely do the players back out of it. It has happened. Cleveland was burned by Jeffrey Del Rosario a few years ago, who spurned Cleveland and walked away from a deal that was potentially there for him, and ended up signing, I think, with the Braves, and then ended up getting traded to the Royals, if I remember correctly. And he's still working his way to the majors, and he's not quite there yet. But you have these guys who are so young, so far away, getting all of these millions of dollars committed to them. And hopefully Cleveland gets Francisca in the organization, and he's a great player. Video I've seen of him is he is top of the scale speed, according to what I've seen on him. Hopefully he maintains that as he grows. But Eric Loggenhagen threw out something a few weeks ago suggesting that they could have an international draft. And if they do, that's definitely going to change a lot of things. Some people have pushed for the international talent to be included with the other players, which to me is comparing apples and oranges when you have high school talent, college talent, and then all of a sudden some 16-year-olds. So do you want to compare your high school sophomores to your college graduates and your high school seniors? You know, I mean, that's kind of crazy. It really sets up an uneven field there. I think that they would have to, and I think they probably will eventually do a international draft, but I think it will go more along the lines of solely being an international draft. And there's been speculation that that's why the international period was pushed to January. And then the July draft would be for the amateur talent coming out of high school and college. And then you would essentially have these two drafts 6 months from each other, giving scouting departments plenty of time. Also giving the organization time to work money into the budget and all of that for all of that too. So there is a monetary thing behind it. But all of that said, you know, there's a lot of time and development that can happen with these players. And that's why you see some of these guys like a Jose Ramirez go from a $50,000 signing bonus, basically kind of an afterthought player or a guy that, hey, he's interesting. He's got a tool. There's something we like about him, but you know, we're not really willing to make a large commitment. For that matter, Jose Baez, which is Jose Ramirez's brother, got a larger contract than Jose did at $250,000. Yeah, and who knows? That may have been, I don't know. Yeah,
he hasn't exactly. Gone
that's,
anywhere
that's the
yet.
Words I was looking for. A favor to the family, so to speak. Teams do that. We used to see that when they had the 40-round draft where I think Tom Hamilton's son got drafted or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, he made it. I think a season or two in the system, and
well, they can adopt me.
Jan
Gomes'
brother got drafted
too,
and he made it for a season. Yeah, that used to happen a lot, and now it does not.
Yep, 5,000 not sold.
Same. I'll take whatever they want to give me. It doesn't matter if it's even if it's 10,000. Just I'll take 10,000. I come cheap. Well, you know, if there's an international draft, there won't be any sort of regulation to it as far as how the MLB draft is negotiated. I don't even know how much that's bargained. Like, you know, and speaking of the CBA, we're going to get to that in a second, but I want to make a few more points about the international signing class because I just saw Ben Badler tweeted that the signing of Yankee Baptiste is finally official as of today, switch hitting shortstop. There's been some talk in the bargaining agreements that draft picks will be affected based on a lottery or player, you know, teams doing this and teams doing that, and you know, maybe having draft pick compensation taken away from free agents. But the one thing you can be certain of, if there is a international draft, it'll be instituted by the league with zero oversight. If they want it, there's no one to push back on it. You know, it's you know, what was it last year with 2020, and they decided to change the rules of the draft.
They
were like, okay,
well,
it's only going to be
union.
Five rounds. And then last year it ended up being 20 rounds. Okay, so that was negotiated. I will bet that the international part of it will not be negotiated because
I don't even
know
why
that's even
in conversation at this point when it comes to the CBA.
They do not care.
With you, I was thinking about that earlier today. Like, why are they even talking about doing a draft lottery? I know they're saying it's about tanking. It's not really about tanking. Not to me, anyways. I mean, that's not going to. Oh, gee, you may lose the first pick, but get the third pick. I mean, well, yeah.
Well, it wasn't serious.
Talk about the seriousness of Major League Baseball's proposal.
It sure was not a serious proposal.
I think everyone can see through it and call it what it is, but you have to have a paper trail, and maybe there's emails out there or something. Who knows? But I just don't see them doing anything that's going to be beneficial for the players when it comes to the draft.
No, not at all. And that's why I think it's hilarious. They're like, oh, he's, you know, they're talking about how they're going to make changes to the draft and there could be an international draft. And it's like, if the league wants to do it, they're just going to do it. You know, it's probably not going to be negotiated. Like, there's really no power to stop them from doing this sort of thing. So if they really want to do it, they're going to do it. And it probably won't be good for the player or the talent, the kids. You know, it's not they get more money this way now. The way it's set up now, a draft would just cap their signing bonuses the way they capped signing bonuses on the drafted players, because you know, they started introducing hard slots and not hard slots, but you know,
which one?
Slots for each spot, because that was never a thing before. Remember, there was no over or under slot for draft picks. It was just you could sign players to major league deals.
It's
like
all about
Steven Strasburg got a major league contract out of the draft. They stopped that. They put slots in there.
When it comes down to it,
there's draft pools now. And that stuff
what
never
they
used
invest
to happen.
In and what they get in return. If you think of players in that regard,
right, exactly.
And I don't. If you look at them solely as assets, then you're not getting much of your return for the investment that you're putting in. I'll argue that's because you're shooting yourself in the foot because you're not giving these players adequate housing, adequate meals, adequate salaries and things like that, where they want to work hard, where they want to keep their bodies in, or they can keep their bodies in great shape. By having adequate meal money, things like that, the little things that matter, the psychological edges and advances that players have or would have just by those things alone, being able to better take care of themselves physically, mentally, emotionally, all translates on the field, I think. But when you're looking at players as numbers and you're trying to quantify them that way, mm-hmm. it's not, you're dealing with people. And people are never a number game.
Yeah, and that's why Cleveland, I mean, as much as they partake in the shade, the international signing class stuff.
Some of these guys haven't played in 2 years.
There's 14-year-olds that have deals
or
handshake agreements with a major league baseball team.
International stage is because they know they got a deal with the Yankees or they got a deal with whoever it is. And if they get injured or something like that, that $2 million deal that will set them for life. And well, we hope it will set them and their families for life or their biscones. That's a whole nother conversation there. And I think there was a great Netflix documentary about that a few years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's just so much shadiness going on with how this all works. And, Cleveland partakes in it as well. So they're not exempt from anything, but I will say, I guess it should not be praised because it should be the bare minimum, but you don't want to praise anybody for doing the bare minimum, but they invested, I forgot how much, $1 million into their international academy, where the kids go and they have, it's basically like a college setup where it's a dorm where they sleep and they eat and they work out and they go to school when they're not playing baseball. So basically it's a college campus in the Dominican for all these international kids so they can finish their education, English.
That's a huge recruiting tool, too.
Regularly good meals.
Look at some of the pictures that we've seen for some of these college campuses. I think
they're not just playing baseball and then, going home.
The facilities that they have for their baseball players.
It is.
I mean, it was immaculate. I was blown away. Like, gee whiz, these multi-million-dollar facilities with all of these equipment for college players. And I'm like, you really realize how much money is involved in professional even in the college athletics. I think Cleveland did a really good thing there. And you're seeing players graduate from the GED program. And I think that's a really good thing, making sure these guys are getting an education. A lot of them are learning English too because of it. So there are some good things going on there. I wish there was more. I still think it's shady signing a 14-year-old or offering them or their agent or their representative or family member, who knows, millions of dollars to sign some kid. But we could talk about that and try to solve it, but nothing I say or you say is really going to change anything for that matter. But it's frustrating to see some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. It is part of baseball right now, and I hate to kind of put it that way, but it is what we have right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. And like I said, it's good that Cleveland does those sort of things, but that should be the bare minimum. Every team should, if you're going to sign a 15-year-old kid and he's from whatever part of the world.
I thought you said we were developed.
It's, you know, maybe not a developed nation like US for all of our problems. You know, you've got a what's that?
We're not on the same page as Japan. Let's put it that way. Beautiful country. Well,
okay. Maybe not as developed as we'd like to think sometimes, but Yeah. So
unrest and uncertainty.
If you're going to do that, if Dominican Republic and especially places like Venezuela, where there's just kidnappings and things like that, like you alluded to, by not putting out signing bonuses, because guys like Chorio and his tourists who are from Venezuela, that's a very dangerous country right now, unfortunately, and yeah, if you're going to put these kids into, okay, baseball's your full-time job, but you're barely, you know, old enough to drive a car, yeah, you should be giving them the resources to finish their education and to learn English if they're going to play baseball in the States, or just operate as human beings in a country they've never been to that speaks an entirely different language, and give them the skills to just live. That's the bare minimum. So I'm not really praising. You're right. It's a good recruiting tool. It's good they do that, but I wouldn't say it's
recruiting tool
praiseworthy, because it's what probably that
shows is a lot of these other
a bare minimum
teams kind of aren't thing. Valuing these things for these guys, you know, for these players that they're signing. It's been a good step in the right direction. I will give honor where it's due in that regard. It's a good step in the right direction, something that Cleveland's instituted several years ago, something that they like to do to get all of their players involved. And they do want all of these young guys involved in that. The first year that they opened that academy, I think that they signed 46 players. And then you had 2020, and basically there was a lost year for all of them, where they were just stuck at the academy working out all together, which is good, but none of them got to move out to Arizona or whatever. That's why you're seeing smaller international classes for Cleveland over the last couple of years, too.
Right.
Instead of spreading the wealth even further, you end up with you have four guys off of the top of my head that have $1 million salary or near out of this signing class, you know. I think it's a good approach. Then you end up with all of these pitchers that they're signing for bare minimum type of bonuses. And mm-hmm. you know, when you look at that, I think maybe we still see a college arm heavy or an arm heavy draft again in the future. You know, last year they went with 19 pitchers in the amateur draft in July. Maybe they end up doing something very similar again next year, because here's 16 players and two of them are pitchers, and in all likelihood, neither one of these guys are receiving a salary or a signing bonus higher than $10,000 or maybe $50,000. Mm-hmm. They're not highly regarded prospects.
Yeah, that's definitely a trend we've noticed over the last 2 years or so. And especially because you can't I know they eliminated one level, you know, and there's no more Mahoning Valley short season, but, when you talk about just filling innings, there were, you know, when the draft was 40 rounds, you could go for maybe guys you liked more with a little more risk early in the draft. And then if you needed someone to fill out, you know, I look at it as a Zach Draper. Zach Draper is a lefty who's been in the organization for quite a few years. I think he's 26 now. And he pitched
13 or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, those guys, I think Tolley was a higher pick. I think Tolley was a 10th round pick. But I think Zach Draper was a later pick, and I'm just saying, like, did they draft him because they thought he could be a major leaguer someday? Maybe, but really he's filled a role in the organization where he's pitched, like last year specifically, he pitched in Lake County, Akron, and Columbus, and that just is not common most of the time, but because he fills that role, I don't know if you can, in a 20 round draft, if you can, I don't want to say waste the pick is the wrong word, but you can, if it was like the 30th round. Yeah. And you could draft someone like that. Like we just talked about, you talked about Juan Gomes and Tom Hamilton's kid. Those guys didn't have any expectations of playing in the majors. They were favors. So you could do that in a 40-round draft. Same with, you know, using a 30th-round pick on a senior pitcher who you knew was going to sign. There was a guy for 4 years you can count on to fill innings in the organization, even if you didn't expect much from him. But that allows you to take a chance on a hitter. Yeah, yeah. That's a guy you could – and that's a spot where you could take someone higher in the draft, maybe was a hitter that had more risk, but you liked him because you didn't need to worry about allocating that spot to a pitcher you counted on innings from. So, and then you combine that with, like what you said, with not signing very many international
there
pitchers.
There is also the position change.
That all kind of goes hand in hand. So,
because these guys play shortstop, the draft, a lot of them, they have a strong arm, and several of them have on its own. Pitch. I don't know from the list who has. But Tanaj Thomas, when he was signed, was originally a shortstop, moved to third base, and also pitched, and now he's a minor league pitcher that could be a Rule 5 draft a Rule 5 draft pick this year from the Pirates, and somebody that the Indians at the time traded away. Ignacio Feliz, I don't know if anyone remembers him or not, but he was a shortstop,
if that ever happens,
turned pitcher, and then traded for Kevin Pollicki. He was with the Padres.
I think they traded in Tampa Bay, didn't they? Or was that part of the Pittsburgh trade? I don't know where he ended up.
I'm not sure. I know Maton.
Was he part of the Phil Maton deal?
Oh, it was the guy they traded to the Mets.
No, you
I
know
can't
what? There was another pitcher they got
from the Padres. They traded for him, and then they turned around.
Who did they get?
He ended up traded with Sam Haggerty. Yes, Walker Lockett.
Oh yeah, it was Walker
Pollicki.
Yeah, it was Walker Lockett, and they ended up trading to the Mets with Sam Haggerty.
He started out as a shortstop, so seeing them sign 1, 2, 3, 4,
he was part of the
5, 6, 7, 8, 9 out of 16 players. So what is that? 55% of their draft international signing class is shortstops. Several of these guys, maybe they move them back to catcher. You know, like you said with Lopez, he moved to catcher. Not uncommon to see some of these guys move to other positions.
Well,
because a lot of them are playing shortstop to get attention to begin with, because you're looking at the shortstop and on their teams where they were at, they were probably the most athletic, the best player on the team. And that's why they got signed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a shortstop when he was coming up.
Well, just like Aaron Bracho, I think, I don't know, I can't remember if they signed him as a shortstop, but he's definitely not a shortstop now. Right, so there you go. You have him, Gabriel Rodriguez, who most certainly is probably going to play third now, Junior San Quentin, for sure, and like we talked about before, John Kenzie Noel, same thing.
Johan Santana
all signed
was
as shortstops
shortstop
that are probably not shortstops anymore.
Okay. Well, I've got him confused with somebody else, clearly.
Was he an infielder? Jeez, yeah, it wouldn't shock me. Well, he's a left-hander, so I don't think he could have been. I wonder if he... I mean, that happens.
There was a pitcher, I can't remember who it was.
He was a switch pitcher. They would have left him a switch pitcher if that was
in his career.
Guys don't happen as much anymore.
Maybe that's who I was thinking of. I know he played some shortstop before he ever developed as a pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to go all the way back, I think, I want to say Jose Mesa back in the day was an infielder. I can't remember. I think he might have been an infielder. And then there was a guy, he never even ended up pitching.
I remember
there were guys that, this is a draft story, and he's a local guy, Cleveland, Stetson Alley from,
I think, Ignatius.
Did he go to Ignatius or Eds? I'm sure if someone from Eds and Ignatius is listening and I don't know it. I don't want to offend them because I know that's he ended up, he got drafted by the Pirates as a pitcher and then switched to third base. And then he's been back and forth. He's with the Rays, but Yeah, I mean that happens all the time. So when you're really,
yeah,
especially talented. Well, what example do we have on Cleveland right now? It's what Anthony goes, right?
And he went from thrower to pitcher.
He was drafted as an outfielder, now he's a pitcher. So
it takes time.
But he wasn't international signing, so I guess doesn't quite compute. That's true. That's been a good story. Yeah, I would really like to. I know he pitched a little bit in the Dominican League this winter. He hasn't pitched since. He's been out of it. But I'd really like to get the season going again so we can talk about, or not the season, but the offseason going, talking about building a bullpen to talk about him again. Do you want to? I think we've covered international signing pretty good. I would say, do you want to get to some questions? Do you want to talk about the lockout a little bit? Because there was a proposal, and I want to see what we think of these proposal ideas from.
Sure, let's have at it.
The league, because the league was the last one to make a proposal, and the players obviously didn't accept. Do you want to banter about that for a second? All right. So last week was the first time in 43 days that the league and the players negotiated. Well, I shouldn't say 40. It was the first time in 43 days they talked about core economics, quote unquote. They talked about other non-significant stuff in between then, but this is the first time they've had a real big meeting. And it was a web conference, a Zoom meeting. And some of the proposals were this. This is why we consider the offer so unserious. The competitive balance tax was what, 200 and
yeah. There's 240 and the owners come back at 214.
And I think the players wanted to be 240. Is that right? I could be wrong. And right, $4 million, and they said it would eventually get to 220. So they essentially went, okay, you want 240, we'll meet you not in the middle at 214, eventually 220. I would say that's a non-starter right there, because teams have already acted as if the collective or the competitive balance tax is essentially a salary cap. Because, look, the Boston Red Sox traded Mookie Betts basically because they weren't going to pay him all that money and stay under it. So they did that. So they're treating
the Dodgers salary cap for a long time too, you know.
And I think the other thing that's more one year that obviously Cleveland is not yeah. in any and sort of realm they didn't to, care.
But they've worked under it and
talk about
you
hitting
know,
that.
Who was the pitcher that they traded to the Reds a few years ago? Where the Reds traded to them and the Reds took back some bad contracts. Just yeah, and that was a money deal, you know, just to keep them under it.
Bronson Arroyo, yeah. Or Alex Wood, yeah. Yeah. So there's that. And then the one that I think doesn't make sense, but it could, is the MLB offered a modified lottery, like a draft system. But it was only for the first three picks. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really... I'm sorry, if you pick in the top 5 or 10 of the draft... I mean, yeah, the MLB draft is harder than every other draft out there, but, you know, for you who've looked at the draft so heavily the last several years, clearly when you pick in the top 10, you have a great chance to get a nice talent. And anybody who picks in the top 10, you're essentially drafting your new top prospect, right? Like, it's very rare if you're drafting the top 10, then the guy you're drafting is not your top prospect.
I don't care if I'm 1 or 5.
Top 3, doing a lottery for the top 3 is just pointless because... If I'm an MLB team, I don't care if I'm 1 or 3. Like, right, because you're still going to get a player that you really want, but you still have no idea what's going to happen because, like, unless not every there's not every year you get a Bryce Harper or I'm trying to think of what other guys.
That's one. Chris, one every
Chris
10
Bryant
years
was in a slam dunk, but
you know scenario. You know,
there's not a lot of there's
really
not a lot of those guys
it,
in the draft.
But
okay,
I would say. Do
where
that
you care
for the top 8 teams or something like that. Make it a weighted yeah. lottery, kind of like the NBA does. I mean, 10 would be fair to me even, you know. They're trying
say
10. To compensate small market teams for
I would say
winning. 10. I think you want to do that. Make sure they have money to spend by supplementing teams. If the NBA can give every single team $30 million last year, during the midst of COVID, or in 2020 during the midst of COVID, where's all the NBA's money, or where's all of MLB's money at, you know, invest back into these organizations. And I think a lot of that comes back to the TV revenue, and instead of taxing what they're spending, tax the TV mm-hmm. revenue and then equally distribute that. If everybody pays 10% tax on their TV revenue, use that as the pool money to distribute to the small market teams.
Yeah, instead that would be nice too, but
have some sort of cap. But instead of having this cement ceiling, so to speak, where you're not going above that mark, because that's essentially what teams have done for years now, is they've avoided that. Or if they've gone above it the next year, they've gone right back below it, so they don't get the highest penalty for going in back-to-back years, you know. It is a de facto cap.
It is. You know what? Going back to the original point of all this is, there's a reason that players' salaries are often reported. You know, you can trust. That's how. Look, there's no. There's, you know, you got COTS contracts, and Fangraphs has a thing for payroll, and there's other sites that use things for payroll, and we try to track Cleveland's payroll. But if you notice, you go out, you don't see, you know, the same kind of detailed reporting for revenue. You have Forbes magazine trying to every year rank the revenue or the value of each franchise. It's so vague and nobody knows, because there's no reporting on it. Everybody wants to keep the owner's book shut, but when it comes to player contracts, they sure are happy to leak sources
on the contract.
That's why you have COTS contracts and roster resource on Fangraphs reporting contracts. Right, you have all that reported, and it's kept track of in other sites, but there's no site that's tracking how much each owner is worth and how much they're spending and what the revenue is, because nobody wants that out there. That's the problem in the first place, is that stuff's all kept quiet and no one's going to try to get it. And player contracts, that's easy to get. You can find somebody to tell you the numbers of a contract. So when it comes to draft and taxing things like TV deals, that's the first problem. That's why we're in this mess in the first place. But you're right. I think Gage on Twitter the other day was saying about, wasn't going back and forth, but he was quote tweeting somebody who was complaining about ownership and revenue. And they said, you know, there are no small market teams and they all have big TV deals and this and that. And the TV deal of things is kind of weird, because, or it's pretty cut and dry actually, because I tweeted back to him. I said, there's no TV company or no broadcasting company that exists that's going to pay Cleveland the same amount of money for broadcast rights as they would the Dodgers, because the Dodgers are just in a bigger city. They have a bigger fan base. They have a bigger population to market to. So those TV contracts are not fair and equal. I don't care. I mean, we obviously know at this point Cleveland and the Dolans negotiated a bad TV deal. I think we can agree on that. But even the best negotiator, the best deal, is not going to get them the same TV deal as the Dodgers or the Angels or even the Rangers, for that matter. You know, those markets are just different. They are what they are. So that's one thing that's never going to have a level playing ground.
I think the TV deal is the answer to leveling the playing field. If they truly want to level the playing field and they want to do something about it,
that's one place I would go. But where does the money go? That's the question. When the money is distributed, where is it going? You have to have proof it's going to the players. The players aren't going to negotiate for TV deal, TV money to be spread evenly to the owners, unless they know some of it's going to go in the players' pockets. They're not going to let the owners just pocket it and do nothing.
I've been resistant to that, but seeing where things really are and kind of learning a little bit more through life experience, I'll just say that I'm no longer against there being a salary floor. I think that there needs to be a salary floor, but I think the answer to the salary floor comes with the TV deals and essentially putting in a tax on that rather than on the revenue generated from a tax on teams passing the competitive balance threshold. Because how many teams have really passed that threshold? So how much money is being generated there? Truth is, not a lot.
Right. Yeah. That's the biggest deal. So I don't know. I think they really have to, I don't want to say regulate, but there needs to be some sort of cap and some sort of balance to all this. And the play, I'm sure the players would love a salary floor, but the problem is they don't want a cap that comes with it. And the league side of things are still saying things like, changes to when players reach free agency is still off the table. So any kind of, and you know, here was the other proposal that made no sense. The other proposal they had was to pay or to award a draft pick to a team to players who don't commit service time issues. You know, that was like the top 100 prospects. If this player gets so many votes for Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, or MVP
award last year, then on both leagues,
right? Like that's not even a.
For Rays get picked.
I don't even know why you throw that in there.
How long did they play him though? Half of the season. Yeah, I know they gave him a $200 million deal.
Franco and who wasn't the NL?
And did either of those start the season with the team? I don't think either of them did. I think both of them.
Yeah, Johnson in India was in the National League. I think India was up pretty early. He was. India played in 150 games. So I would say India was up most of the
season. He's a super two player because of it.
He was just down long enough to manipulate service time. He didn't start the year with the team, but he was down. He'll be a super.
When you have a player like that.
He's a super two player, but he's not going to get. He won't be a free. He'll be a free agent like 7 years instead of six.
I mean, if you're the organization, you're so extending
they still
your control
to service time. Huh? Right, and that. Yeah, and the problem with that proposal is A, the teams are being rewarded draft picks for not manipulating service time. So what's going
monetary?
To the player? Like the player
salary
is not being kept down, but
players.
He's winning awards. I would rather give the bonus to him.
You win an award, you were on the
and
roster.
On top of that,
guess what? You just tiered up $250,000 next year. Plus you get a bonus for winning that award,
exactly,
whatever it
be.
Is, you know, to me, that's where it should be. Should teams get I think they have it wrong to me. If you want to really make it a competitive league for every team, remove the draft pick penalty on players and put in draft pick compensation for every player. You know, and I've mentioned that tiered compensation, restricted free agency, all of that. There's creative ways around this if they want to implement that. Some of it can be convoluted and complex, or you can keep it as simple as possible and stick with the 6 years. I like the idea of including restricted free agency, giving people free agency at the age of 29, depending on if they've had 6 or 5 years of service, 5 years of service for a college player or whatever, you know, 6 years of service for a high schooler.
Well, the league says, that's a non-starter. They're not going to discuss any of that. And that's a core issue. The league is saying there's no. And what you're saying is, if players win an award as a rookie, they should get a bonus and they don't. And so you're asking teams, A, not only to promote a player long enough.
In theory, the Reds would receive a draft pick
in the running for
moving India up and moving him from
that
third year.
Extra money for doing it?
You know,
no way.
$700,000. So because he's a Super 2, he's going to get probably $2 million, $2.5 million his first year in ARB. So they just paid about $1.5 million that they didn't have to in theory if they'd kept him down for another month. So awarding them a draft pick, but they're not rewarding the player. So there has to be some give and take on both sides of this, I think, is what we're both really saying here, is the players need compensation for what they're doing. And I think the base salary for players should be higher than it is anyways. Probably double. I think $1 million, $1.25 million, $1.5 million at 3 years. I think that there should be restricted free agency, be able to receive compensation based on tiers of qualifying offers on players. You know, let's say Jose Ramirez reaches free agency and Cleveland puts the highest tier. If you want to prevent tanking, add draft pick compensation to Jose Ramirez. And if Cleveland gets three draft picks, a first, a second, and a third round draft pick, and Jose Ramirez signs with the Astros, then Cleveland gets three draft picks for him. Instead of prospects, they get draft picks that they can turn around and replenish the system with. You know, that's another way to supplement rosters, is by doing it that way. They would have every motivation to keep a player instead of trading him and contend and try to win.
That's an interesting way to look at it. I wouldn't be against that, to try to incentivize teams keeping their own players. But I don't know, just some control of the stuff. It's like the league is already saying we're not going to negotiate on this because they don't want to give up.
I told you these.
They don't want teams to have to give up.
The owners are like politicians.
Control. It's all about control here, and of course it is. But there's money too. Yeah, it really is. I think I was saying this to somebody else. I think that it comes down to a couple things here. I think if the players are going to have to pick, do you want to stop service time from being manipulated, or do you want to get players to free agency younger, or you want to get them paid younger? I don't think you're going to accomplish both. I think if you want young players to get paid sooner, and not have the system gamed where they don't pay guys over 30, but they rely on getting cheap production out of 21-year-olds because they're really good. I think you got to pick and choose. You know, do you want them to get to free agency earlier, or do you want to get them paid earlier, or do you want to stop manipulating service time? And their service time thing to me is yes, it's a big deal, but it's also, it's only a big deal, and I guess because, you know, you want more stars to play sooner and it gets them to free agency sooner. But this goes back to the top 100 thing where they were saying, you know, if the top 100 prospect doesn't get held down for service time, then teams get rewarded. How many guys does that happen to every year? Like, you're talking about the upper echelon of players. You know, Francisco Lindor got held down for service time and Super 2. Chris Bryant got held down for service time, and Jonathan India just long enough to get an extra year out of him. Like, that only happens, he won Rookie of the Year. That only happens to the top tier of free agents. You're not talking about, like, and first of all, who's a top 100 list are you working off of? That's extremely disturbing on its right. And the teams have a lot of influence over how those lists end up. Let's be honest. But that only happens to the 1% of free agents. So if you're really looking to, again, this, what have we talked about before? Are the players negotiating to the top 1% of their own players? Or are they talking about, are they negotiating on behalf of the best interests of the entire association? Right. And so if they're negotiating the top 1%, then yes, they want to stop service time from being manipulated because it only affects the top 1% of prospects. But if they're negotiating on behalf of the rest, you let that go and you talk about, okay, how do we get those players that come up at 24 or 22 paid better if they're not going to reach free agency at a desired age? I think they're going to have to pick one or the other. And we'll see what happens.
Weird.
I don't know if
that one just strikes me.
Did I miss
weird.
Any other silly proposal ideas? We had the draft pick compensation for no service time. We had. Yeah, and there was a guy on Twitter, Eugene Freeman, if you don't follow him, if you're interested in labor negotiations, he was tweeting about how this proposal was very not serious by the league. And I said, is that considered a violation of negotiating? Is that a negotiating in bad faith? Because, as I said to you off air, if the league is taking their proposal because they're trying to push the players up against the threat of missing paychecks and because they're not going to start spring training on time in the season, and it's going to force them to cave to take a deal they don't want to take because they want to get on the field, you know, is that negotiating in bad faith because you're wasting time by submitting unserious proposals? And he said there takes a lot of proof to,
I think, putting that out there,
make that accusation that they're liable, that they're negotiating
a false accusation without,
I don't know, that's what it seems like to me.
But I think a lot of us are cynical enough to realize what's really going on. And there's a countdown, and it's the other 95% who are going to get squeezed in this if they're not getting the paychecks. Some of these guys may not notice they're not getting paid. Some of your top tier players, but the other 95%, your guys who are not career major leaguers, your guys who are going to get a couple of years in the major leagues, maybe, and get the minimum salary for those years that they're there. They're the ones that are hurting all of this. And that's why I think that you have to, I think really for the players to win, they have to win on both sides. They have to win for the upper tier, and I think they need to win on bringing the base salary higher. And MLB already proposed to bring the base salary higher, but not to not to where the players want it. And I think there's middle ground there on that. But everything else, it seems like there, you can see one or two areas where, you know, they may have something to work with, but there's other areas where they seem like they're far away. Are we waiting for a response for the players now? Is that where we're at, or where are we in all of this? Because I've not seen anyone say anything since Jeff Passan's tweets. What was it, a week ago now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been almost a week. Yeah, I think the ball's in the players' court now to respond. I think he said, you know, it's up to the players to respond if they're going to, but that there was even some confusion, or I should say just a lot of posturing about who was due to submit the next proposal, because for a while going into the new year, the players thought the owners had to submit a new proposal, and the owners thought it was the players' turn to submit a proposal. So it was just a lot of posturing on whose turn is it. But the league made the last one, so clearly it's the players. Unless they, if the players don't submit, then they're just, I don't know, they didn't want to respond because they didn't like the offer, so there's nothing to negotiate off of. I don't know. This is still a mess, and for the first time, I actually believe we're going to miss games. I said before,
we'll get something done before we miss any games,
because there's too much money to lose, but... at this point, yeah, I'm,
you know, and they did that during COVID and last year. Maybe it just means 7-inning games.
That's something else they have to negotiate on.
But maybe less offense for the players, or just double headers for the player, and they expand the rosters on those days. They'll do something. The owners will do something that benefits them. Let's put it to you that way.
Maybe. Yeah, but then you have to get the players to agree to that, and then that's just another thing on the table. You have to get an agreement.
It's the week of the season, and that's why I think
it's messy.
Just go to double headers. It's
taking another risk, and you know, things aren't. I think it'd be 2 weeks. I would say 2 weeks.
So 152 it is, Justin.
I would say they'll play more than 150 games, but I think we could easily lose 12 games total.
I think the players could deal with that.
If not more. That's fine. I guess let's get to some questions. We're about an hour and 15 minutes in. Let's get our questions out of here. We got a couple. Well, Stacy chimed in late, our own Stacy Hannon, wanted to know more about Robert Lopez. I think we covered Robert Lopez a little bit earlier, so that's good, right? You can check that off the
There's
list.
Some pop too.
Let's start with Hiram. Yes, defensive catcher, left-handed swing. He had a really, you know, as far as complex stats go,
and they had, he had a really good season last year. I'm curious to see how much run he gets in Arizona from Lynchburg, because
he wasn't even 18 yet.
I believe. I'm gonna say, I believe if he is 18, he just turned 18. So, yeah, he there's a chance he can get to Lynchburg because there's just not a lot of guys in front of him that are good. Let's get to Hyrums real quick. What would it take to get to Trey Mancini, and do the Guardians have a left-handed reliever close to being ready? I wouldn't trade for Trey Mancini, to be honest. I think I don't think the Orioles should trade him because there's too much.
Yeah.
Sentimental value there, and he's what, a year away from free agency? I think he's 1 year out. I think they'll just let it ride out anyway, and I wouldn't give up much for him anyway. He's a guy who strikes out a lot, only walks a little bit. I know he's had some good seasons in the past. He's also not a great fielder.
I don't know what his salary is for next year, but
for 1 year, he's a first baseman. It's not really a not a guy I would put in the outfield. I don't see the point in moving. Yeah, it's his
RB3. If he's traded, right. It's midseason to me.
I don't think the Orioles themselves are going to get a lot in a trade
by trading
anyway.
Trey Mancini for him in the offseason, my opinion.
He's projected.
Will they move him? Possibly, yeah. Probably, knowing how the Orioles operate. I don't think fans will be very happy about it. But I think they smooth that over by doing it midseason when nobody notices because they stink.
Yep. Right. And that gives them a chance to say goodbye to the fans. Or the fans say goodbye to him, I guess. So as far as a reliever, left-handed reliever being close to being ready.
Are they prospects?
The older Logan Allen, Sam Henches, Anthony Goh. Anthony Goh.
Scott would be the highest. Joey Cantillo, I think, could potentially end up in the bullpen just out of sheer numbers. And
Adam Scott. Crunched.
But Adam Scott makes the most sense right now, but I think there's a good chance if there's a Rule 5 draft, he's selected. So. No. Will Dion would be an interesting
other than
name.
That, no, I don't think
in a year or two, maybe Doug really, Nikhazy, but I think Nikhazy's a starter.
I'm not putting Ben Crowth up there or yeah, so not really close, I wouldn't say. No, nobody close. And anybody prospect wise is kind of far away, and not far away, but they haven't started their careers yet, and I would say it's more likely a starter gets converted to a reliever.
Yeah, in that sense of the word. Later.
That kind of answers that, especially with lefties. You want to have them start as long as they can, you know, until they prove they can't. Right, exactly. And then we've got a ton of questions from Flutorius. This is, maybe we answered some of this already. Let's try to run through these as fast as we can. Well, no, the actual penalty of players, if players and management talk right now, say around conditioning, pitch development, swing adaptions, usual ostracism for crossing picket lines, or some kind of contractual recourse. I don't know. I'm not a labor expert. It's hard to say. I'm sure if you cross picket lines,
you can't talk to coaches or anybody.
I'm pretty sure if you did that.
And I'm sure there would be some sort of.
You're breaking some sort of rule. I don't know what the recourse would be, but
fine or something like that for it if they could prove it.
Yeah,
I think a lot of these coaches and stuff have probably prepared the players' information and things to do in the off season beforehand, knowing that this was a potential outcome.
I would say the only thing you can really get done is if
third party,
if teams are allowed to communicate with trainers because they're not part of the organization, like a player's trainer.
If they're listening to the new guy, I'm available.
They can relay the message to the team or something. You can get around it that way, but that's specifically towards like rehab, like Tyler Freeman rehabbing his shoulder. Yeah. Good mediator. I would say he would be great for that job. He also wanted to know, with a tight window for the hot stove work to get done, if the CBA is settled, do you suppose teams are talking, are free to talk trade in theory right now? They're not supposed to be, but I'm sure there's some level of trade talks going on. I would say everybody who's reported on this at this point says that if there are trade talks going on,
I think we'll see some deals
teams,
take
very
place
little because they're trying not to get caught
a few days afterwards. But I think that a lot of that will be because there was a lot of stuff put in place beforehand. What's your asking price? So a lot of them have a really good gauge on what they're doing. And they really don't have to do a whole lot of conversating right now. I'm sure there's a little bit of conversation going on. But if there were some sort of proof of it, or if it was to come out there, I'm sure there would be penalty or fines, possible suspension. Who knows, for going around. I don't think it's worth it to the teams. So I think they've done a lot of the prep work beforehand. I think they've already done a lot of the heavy lifting, and they'll know where teams are at. And I think things could transpire relatively quickly within a few days once something does come to place.
Yeah, so I would say probably you're going to have a few deals that happen quickly depending on where things end, but I wouldn't expect like a monsoon of deals because I don't think they're talking that much.
We need that excitement as fans, hopefully, just for the fan base. And
hopefully this ends in enough time where free agency can happen, because I'd really hate to lose that part of the offseason.
True. Maybe with a free agent.
Not only that, but Cleveland's got a lot of work to do themselves. So we need to see what they can do from that aspect of things. Because right now, if the season... Yeah, well, if the season started today...
I'm not the guy for backup catcher.
Sandy Leone would be the backup catcher, and that's just not okay.
Knees and shoulders.
And they wouldn't have a catcher for next year either, for that matter. You're not, you volunteer to negotiate, but you're not going to volunteer to be the backup catcher. Okay. We know where your line's drawn. Another question from Vittorius. Might not be popular, but given the reality they can't extend both Bieber and Jose, would the team be better off signing neither and instead spend the money on hand loading up the roster around them for the next 2 years? I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's what they should have done with Lindor, right? If they were going to sign Lindor to an extension, forget spending that money long term and just dump it into 1 or 2 years and try to have the best team around him. That's what they should have done. They didn't do it, though. I would agree. If you know you're not going to be able to re-sign those guys, load your I don't know. Maybe it's the wrong way to look at it, because this team doesn't like go out and spend money on free agents. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to sacrifice the farm system and add guys like the way they did Andrew Miller and Bryce Jay Bruce to load up for that year. I don't know if they'll do that. I would say yes in theory, but I don't know if it comes down to trading prospects for major leaguers with high salaries to load up the team for the rest of the control over Bieber and Jose. I don't know if they would do that, because then you're sacrificing your future beyond their control. Yeah, it's tricky. In theory, it works. I definitely think they should have done that with Lindor when he was here, but it's super tricky to pull that off if you're hoping to contend when they're gone. Otherwise, you're just sacrificing it, and then you go. That's when you go into tank mode, rebuild and tank mode, right? That's when you end up with 90 lost seasons because you just traded Brian Rocchio for an outfielder for 2 years, and then Rocchio could have been a star for you to build around the next 7 years. Instead, he's playing somewhere else while you just got a 31-year-old outfielder that you only had for a year or two. So that's the risk. I don't know that that's the right way to go. And we're going to end this one on a fun note, because this is really hard. And we're going to do this at the end of our prospect countdown, which is coming up at the end of this month. We're going to have our top prospect list coming out, and all our scouting reports will trickle out day by day. So we'll do this as an exercise once we get to the end of that. But Mark Leffel, great subscriber and follower, wanted us to take any guesses at a 2025 lineup in rotation.
Jeez.
Willie, I'll let you guess a 2025 rotation.
Four seasons.
It's hard, but it's fun.
Gavin Williams, Daniel Espino, Doug Nikhazy, Logan T. Allen, and let me see, maybe a Tommy Mace or a draft pick from this upcoming class.
Love it.
No, I think I don't see them.
Nobody,
unless they extend
on the 2022 roster, is going to be
unless they sign Quantrill. I wouldn't mind seeing them extend Cal Quantrill. I am leery of shoulder injuries, so I think there's potential that Bieber is not extended. I'll just throw that out there. I would extend Quantrill, Reyes, and Ramirez right now, and Austin Hedges too. But that's another thing. Got to have a backup catcher, man. As far as lineup goes, do you want to go on that?
Yeah.
So he'll still be around.
Well, pitching wise, I was going to say, so Cal Quantrill is around,
R4
but in 2025. He's gone. I think Plesac
is gone.
So, in theory, he could still,
possibly.
What's that? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think they'll be traded.
No, they're both. Savali would be here. Savali would be ARB3, and Plesac would be.
I think there's trade value before they go that route.
I would agree. Traded or just non-tendered, depending on how things go with them over the next several years. I'm with you. Hopefully. Hopefully, yeah. I would say for sure Logan Allen.
I forgot Tristan.
Gavin Williams, and I don't know. What about Tristan McKenzie? Is Tristan McKenzie still going to be here at that point?
You have McKenzie in there. I'll say Williams, Logan T. Allen, and Espino will be in the rotation.
Actually, he'll be ARB1 in 2025. Yeah. That would be really fun if that happens. I'm excited for that.
So maybe.
Yeah, lineup. Oof, this is tough. This is a lot harder than projecting.
I don't disagree.
Position.
I think
all right.
Lava is a fringe.
I know it's going to be unpopular with some people,
starter,
but I'm going to say Bo Naylor catcher.
But a fringe one at that. I think Naylor is probably the catcher of the future for the organization right now. First base. Yep. Everybody got to go for the Yankee right now.
I guess I'll say on Kenzie Noel. He's on the 40, so I'm going to say Noel. He better be at that point.
Tyler Freeman or Angel Martinez? I really like Tyler Freeman, though, so I'll say him, but I think Angel Martinez has a major league future somewhere.
Shoot, Tyler Freeman.
Nope, you can't.
Yeah, it also depends on which of these guys are traded away, because they're all not going to be in the organization a year from now. Trust me, there's no way.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be
I could easily say Jose Tena. Shortstop? Shortstop? I'm going to say Rocchio.
If it's not Jose, it'll be Gabe Arias.
Let me check something real quick. Who's your 2025 third baseman while I'm checking something? That's what I was going to say. Okay, we didn't even talk about it this week, and I wanted to talk about it, so maybe we can save it for next week. But with a minority owner coming, and I saw an article. I have to find the link to the
article I shared with you.
The article I saw on some future development deals in downtown Cleveland involved
Josh Harris.
Yeah. I think that was you sent that. It was, first of all, it was the first article I saw that really identified Josh Harris, who is his business partner, as part of the ownership group. So it's not going to be just David Blitzer. It might be Josh Harris.
Of Cleveland, and they're involved in some real estate
development in downtown Cleveland with a result with regards to some. Right. And the other thing, though, is that I think the article said he has a path to majority ownership by 2025. So we're talking the same time right here. So within or is it 2026?
I think they really want to get 4 or 5 years. Generate goodwill.
So I'm going to say, with that in mind, I'm going to say Jose Ramirez is still a third baseman in 2025.
Under his value, but at a much better, more comfortable number for him.
In 2025, Jose Ramirez will still only be 33.
Not nearly as old as me.
Not that old. I'm turning 33 next month, so I'm saying that's not that old.
Now, Justin, you know, so.
Great. Don't re-sign him. Ship him off to Old Timers Day. I'll let you know when I get there. I got a while, thankfully. How about
Kwan in left? I could agree with that.
I'm going to say Stephen Kwan in left.
I got to go with Petey Halpin in center, or my surprise guy there, who might be a rookie by then, would be Luis Durango. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, I think Valera or Halpin in right field.
I'm going to go Valera Petey Halpin in center. I'm going to go with you there. I'll go with Petey Halpin. And then in right field, I think we can say George Valera, hopefully.
Oh, come on. You got to eventually pay somebody. The minimum.
He'll be traded because we're not going to want to pay his salary. Isn't that how that goes?
I'm going to say we extend Fran Mill and Jose.
Where's Paul Ray? Quantrill, Ray Reyes is a free Paul agent Quantrill. After 2024. So that's a great question.
But he's got a great knuckleball.
Paul, don't extend him. That's really
what Tony Huff is doing nowadays
for a baseball player. Jeez. I would hope someone's gonna have to keep him around. Yeah. Geez, DH. I'll say the DH is not on the roster at this point. Maybe I don't know someone who's a free agent that year. They'll sign a DH by then. Hopefully, they'll be smart enough to stop signing just DHs. They'll have guys they can just rotate.
There you go. That works for me.
In and out of the lineup to give him a day off. Like maybe, you know what? Gabriel Arias at third base and Jose Ramirez is your DH. How about that?
He's our closer.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun
Carlos
team.
Vargas, boom, closer.
I'm sure it'll all work out exactly like that because this is very easy to predict.
Ethan Hankins is a setup man. Lenny Torres in the bullpen too.
Carlos Vargas, well, I don't know. He would still be. Right. I'm going to say if he's up
they'll
this
all
year.
All work out. We know they will.
Oof. Just the all prospect team. Because, you know, all the top 20 prospects. Yeah, they all. Xavion Curry is in the bullpen. And, Nick Sandlin's still here. Peyton Battenfield's one of the relievers. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's all going to work out just like that. But what else are we going to talk about? You have to dream on something. So that's what we do. So, again, if you've gotten this far, we're an hour and a half in. Yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for the questions. Yeah. And
you're just a weird stalker.
Yeah,
you know?
I assume. I always say this. I assume if you're listening this long, you have to follow us on Twitter, right? Like that would just be crazy if you're listening to us talk for an hour and a half about nothing. Yeah, that's fine. Be sure. Okay, I'm sure you're following us. If you're not, it's WILLHOO99 on Twitter for Willie, and for me, it's JL_baseball, and for the site account, it's official_CGBI. If you're going to sign up ever for a Guardians Baseball Insider subscription, that time is coming now because in the end of this month and in February and all throughout spring training, whenever that happens, we'll have the top prospect rankings and scouting reports coming out. We're going to doing, I believe, a top 61 this year. We made a decision last year that we weren't going to cap it at a certain number. We're going to just rank the guys we think need reports. If they're good enough to warrant a scouting report, we're just going to do it. So that got us to 61 this year, I think. And we'll write about more than just 61 guys, of course, but that's going to be coming out
very soon.
Next,
and hopefully we'll have a
Hopefully
we'll hear something about the CBA and we'll have a little bit more excitement surrounding baseball.
Soon. Very soon.
We can hope and pray. That's all we got it right now, you know. Either that or just watch Netflix and Roku channel.
I sure hope. Yeah, so Yeah, or watch. I can't say the last time I turned MLB Network on. I used to watch
Cavaliers
who MLB Network religiously, right, and now it's like, you know,
it's a hell of a young team.
There's nothing, no reason to. There's nothing on. Yes, enjoy the Cleveland Cavaliers. Avoid all news about the Browns. The only news so far the Browns offseason is someone got arrested for being naked in public. That's great. Definitely how you want to start your offseason. That guy's having a good start to his 2022. Yeah, you must have. That was the big news today. Was one of their players got arrested for being nude and intoxicated. I think he hit
the Raiders.
A deputy too. So that's always good. Good start to 2022 for that guy. I hope your 2022 is off to a better start than that. Yeah. Mark Davis continuing the strong tradition of Al Davis out there. I think that's a great note to end it on. Thank you for listening, and stay out of trouble, and hopefully you're around next week to listen to us talk again. Thank you.